Hi, podcast listeners. I want to start out today's podcast with a surprise and a quick apology. The surprise is that I've relocated to Europe for the next 6 months and have lots of great transit news to share with you. But I guess it's a little hard to lay the tubes of the internet across the Atlantic because for the first 10 minutes of the podcast, I sound a bit like I'm talking inside of a very echoey digital tube. If you can bear through that, I think we have a good show, and next month I promise the audio quality will be back to its normal levels. To the January 2011 edition of the Portland Afoot podcast. I'm Lillian, your producer.
And I'm Michael, your editor.
This month we're going to look at Portland through a different lens, the lens of Berlin. I'm currently abroad for 6 months in Berlin, Germany, and let me tell you, the transit here is a dream. So we're going to look at it all, bikes, bonds, and buses.
Wait a minute, Lily, you're in Berlin?
I'm in Berlin!
When did this happen?
I moved to Berlin for 6 months, starting on Christmas Day.
This is not actually a surprise to me, but we did not talk about it before because we wanted to make sure that this would work before we could move along with this. Since you're listening to this, obviously it's worked.
The 9-hour time difference means that it is 7 a.m. for Michael and 4 p.m. for me.
In other words, Lily has literally moved 3/4 of the way around the world. In any case, we're about to share our stories with you about Berlin's transit, its bikes, its weather, its cars, and of course we'll finish with our cute TriMet tweets and this month's Only on the Bus.
Enjoy listening. Michael, I think we're going to talk about fares. So what's going on in Portland over there?
Well, it's a whole lot of bad stuff, Lily.
Oh.
Bad stuff.
The TriMet balance the budget game kind of made that clear. Bad stuff was going to happen.
Yeah, we talked about this last month. The it's nothing new in particular, but it's going to fall on everybody who uses the system, not just those who are unlucky enough to live on or work on lines that that are affected.
So what does that mean?
Well, for example, they're talking about eliminating the free transfer, the effect of which is that and the free rail zone, the effect of which is that you're going to have to buy a day pass for any trip that involves at least one transfer, and because of the fare hike that's also going to come in at the same time, it's basically going to cost a minimum of about $6 for every time you get on TriMet. Now, that'll be good for the rest of the day, but there are lots of times when we make a one-way trip, you know, and we're biking or riding or going to somebody else's house for the night or whatever, that people, especially sort of the less bougie people in Portland, are going to have a major barrier to cross to get on TriMet, and that's a big change. And they're simultaneously
that's absurdly expensive.
It's a lot of money. Yeah,
that's so expensive.
It's a sticker price thing. You know, it may not be that much more expensive on paper, but it feels a lot more expensive when you're like $6.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So how does that compare to Berlin? Where they're also talking about cutting the frequency down on maxes. Actually, that was a very popular response so far. By the way, I should say that this survey, which I have expressed love for, And many, I think many people disagree with me in the sort of transit awareness community that this, a lot of people didn't like the survey. I should say that I don't see this survey primarily as a way of getting public input, but as a way of informing the public about the trade-offs.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way. Like, I don't think that, I don't think the majority of TriMet's users are going to go play with that survey, if you call it that. But I think it's an interesting way to kind of get information about what TriMet's board is dealing with right now.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a game. It's not a survey.
It's a game. I call it a game. Okay, so in comparison to Berlin, this is really interesting. So I'm like the same as many people who ride TriMet. I'm surprisingly unaffected by the fares here in Berlin because I get a free pass as a student. And every single student in Berlin gets a free all-zone pass. Which is paid for by your student fees, but it's you can't opt out of it. So as a university student, I actually don't know what the situation is for high school students, but based on the numbers that I see waiting for the bus, they must get some sort of deal.
This is what I suspected, Lily, because you were like, "Oh, transit is so great here." I know transit is great in Berlin, but I suspected that you're just a price sensitive young woman.
I am price sensitive. I also, I will say, I do live in the suburbs here. So the Berlin's idea of suburbs is very different than Portland's. It takes me 20 minutes on the train to get into the very heart of Berlin and about 30 minutes by bike, it can take you 30 minutes to get to downtown Portland and you live in close in Portland. So Berlin's idea of suburbs is very different. I ride transit a lot more here than I do back in Portland. I ride a bike to school every day because I have to ride a bus to get to school. And so therefore it's much faster for me to take a bike to school. But when I wanted to get into the city, I live about 100 meters from the train stop. It's really challenging to want a bike when I can just walk to a place where a bus runs every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I totally. Is the equipment different? Like, is it you don't like riding the Portland buses because they're they're herky jerky and you don't feel you can get car sick and so on.
Yeah, I tend to ride the trains here mostly. Pretty much if a bus trip's involved, I avoid it. They're either double decker or they're the articulated buses. But here's the thing: the trains are amazing to ride. These are real city trains. These are 8-car trains. Mm-hmm. These are not Max little baby 2-car trains.
Right, right. It's like, are they commuter rail? Or are they like you see in Seattle or San Francisco?
Those go much farther. Those will go to Frankfurt or two different cities. The trains that I ride into town are just regular subway trains. The U-Bahn and the S-Bahn are the two lines here.
Is that like the red line and the blue line?
They're not like the red line and the blue line. The U-Bahn and the S-Bahn are two. One is above ground and one is below ground. And then within those, there's like, I think, close to 50 different lines.
Got it. Okay.
So I ride the S25, which is one of the less frequent ones. And I want to point out that means it runs every 20 minutes between 1 and 4 a.m. on Fridays and Saturdays. So frequency is very different here.
What is it? Is it like, is it grade separated, as they say? Is the S-Bahn, is it up? Is it an elevated train?
The S-Bahn is mostly elevated. These are such big trains. You have to remember that you're picturing the size of a New York City subway train. So the space that these stations take up is really massive. The U-Bahn is underground. It's a subway.
Anyway, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's really fantastic. You never have to worry about transfers. Like, transfers kind of stress me out in Portland, worrying about the connection times, am I going to make it, or am I going to have to wait for 15 minutes? Here, I never even look at a schedule to get on the train, nor do I look at a schedule to figure out transfers. I just, know that if I go and I get off the train and I have to transfer to another line, I'll have to walk, to up or down, either to the S or the U-Bahn, and usually wait maybe about 3 minutes at the most and pick up my next train. I've taken trips that involve 5 transfers and there's still trips that are less than 15 minutes.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a totally different world in terms of transfers.
So
here's one of the things to talk about, though.
Yeah.
It costs a lot of money to put your bike on the train here.
Oh, how much?
It's cost €150, which is close to $2 every time.
Right.
Every ride.
Really?
Every direction that you go. So.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
I don't pretty much take my bike on the train unless I absolutely have to.
Yeah. That's interesting. I assume that the idea is that the bike takes up space, and so they don't want you on there taking up space with your bike. Is it very crowded?
It can be really crowded. The most hilarious crowded trains are like the 4 a.m. ones when people get out of clubs. But but during rush hour, it can actually be physically impossible to get your bike on the train, despite these being 8-car trains that come every like 4 minutes.
Right.
So I think it's mostly a space thing. Another annoying thing about transit here is that not all the stations have elevators. And remember, they're underground or elevated, so you almost always have to go up or down a staircase. And so if you're on a bike, that means hafting your bike all the way up. And if you're on a wheelchair, it means it's just completely inaccessible to you. The good news is on the map, they mark all of the ones that are accessible by elevator. So sometimes I plan my trip around, I take a slightly different line so I can get off at a stop with an elevator.
Wow, that is shocking to American ears that a wheelchair couldn't use a station.
Well, just go to Chicago, but...
Yeah, you're right, of course.
New York City also. All of the older transit systems in the United States are not fully ADA accessible at every station yet.
Okay, yeah.
So, but Berlin's got a way to go. But people are amazing. These bikes that people ride here are like 45 pounds, and there are so many people carrying ones with fully loaded panniers like up and down the stairs. Let's talk a little bit about biking in Berlin. So biking in Berlin is... It's not biking in Amsterdam or Copenhagen. There's sort of this big idea that Germany's cities are these amazingly bicycle-friendly places, and they are, but they, especially in the winter, people are not like the freewheeling Amsterdam wool-wearing helmetless people that you see in pictures. These are still, they look like Portland bike commuters, only with a greater range of ages, I would say. People are still wearing helmets here, and they have big bike panniers. The difference is the bikes. The bikes are heavy, they're ugly, and they're not particularly, you know, fast. These are big city commuter bikes.
Why do the Europeans love their heavy bikes? That seems strange to me.
Because they're so practical. You can't buy a bike here that doesn't have built-in generator lights, which means you never have to worry about batteries for your bike lights. And most of them have fenders and chain cases, the kind of bikes that are compatible with wearing your nice work clothes.
I don't get it, yeah. Are they cheaper? Are they just like $200 or something?
Oh, yeah. You can pick up a decent used bike that has generator lights and internal hub and everything for about €50 at the flea market, which is a little under $70.
That's pretty great.
Yeah. And I got my bike. My bike is a little nicer. It has like 10 speeds. And everything else I described, and I spent €115 on it.
Well, the numbers, this survey, this roundup just came out by the National Alliance for Walking and Biking, and they said that they had an international comparison, and Berlin has a 10% bike mode share. That compares to, like, 3% in London, and I don't know if they had a number for Paris, but it was certainly lower. So like Berlin is like more than twice the size of Amsterdam, Copenhagen, than 9 times the size of Portland. It's a huge city with a huge population of bikers.
Right. Guess what?
Something is working, and it's strange. It's interesting to hear you say that it's not as normal there.
It's totally normal. And what you find is that people commute all through the winter in Amsterdam and Copenhagen. Tons of bikers do. Here, people take transit in the winter. There's really very much a bike season. The people you see out biking right now are people like me that will bike no matter what.
Right.
The people that bike in the summer that get us to that 10% mode share in Berlin, I think are very much fair weather cyclists. And I think part of that is because the transit is so
good here. It's so easy to switch modes, you know, and choose based on the weather.
And do you think that these people who are doing these things, are they doing it to save, are they doing it for the same American reasons, you know, to save a little money, to have the exercise, to get the
Yes, but it's not a political statement here. You know, I feel like in the States, even if it isn't a political statement for you, people conceive it as being a political statement. People are like, oh, you bike. Right, you know, like, that must be, you're one of those bikers. And here you're like, you just have a bike and you're riding it. No one bases any assumptions on you based on the fact that you're riding a bike.
Right. So I think that the great transit supplements the great biking. I mean, is it because that there's such great transit and you can get in without a car comfortably in the winter that you are like, oh, well, then I won't get in with a car in the summer either?
I think that's definitely part of it. I mean, I think it's also that cars are really expensive and Berlin makes it's challenging. I mean, parking is difficult. Apartments are tiny. Most people live in apartments, so they don't necessarily have a parking spot out in front of their house. So I think that the cost of car ownership is part of the reason that people are car free, but it's really easy to be car free when the transit is great and there's bike facilities most places. I think one of the key things that makes it easier to take transit here is the fact that transit runs all night. And the fact that the businesses really are oriented around people that are getting there not by car. So I went to IKEA today, actually. And the IKEA is located right next to the transit stop. And you get off the train at the train station, and there's a huge, huge banner that says, you know, this way is the footpath to IKEA. It's a 7-minute walk. And then you walk there, and there's like dedicated pedestrian paths the whole way with signage that are like, IKEA, IKEA. And I went there at 8 p.m. on a Saturday night, and there was a stream of people flowing towards me as I was walking in, all with giant IKEA bags and strange things under their arm, walking back to the train station. There's also a bike path from the train station to IKEA as well as like a bike path that goes just directly there. Businesses really are oriented.
Here, like, you know, the Macy's refuses to have a door facing the transit mall. That's a very different situation. They're like, no, the transit mall is where the vagrants hang out.
That, along with the fact that just like, even the IKEA in Portland, like, is right up next to a transit stop. When have you actually seen someone in Portland go to IKEA on the max? They borrow a car because they want to haul some large furniture.
Even though you may know this, not everybody may know that if you do take the max to IKEA, they will give you a massive discount on your shipping.
Yes.
Yes. It may save you, maybe cheaper than a Zipcar.
Yep. The IKEA in Berlin, however, has lockers next to the door for you to put your own bags and stuff in while you shop. Because there really are that many people coming on transit that don't have a trunk to lock stuff in.
Right.
So I found that interesting. There's just a different mindset here. Something that I've noticed is that every bar, every business, you go to their website, they tell you how to get there from the nearest transit stop, which only certain businesses would do in Portland.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But this is everything. I mean, the department store, to the bar, to the club.
I wonder what the tipping point is, if it's a certain number of people take something and things become that way, or if it's just the fact that it's a different culture and that even if as few people took transit in Berlin as they do in Portland.
I don't think that as few people could take transit in Berlin as do in Portland, and the transit system would still be around. I mean, it's the reason it's so good is because it has these incredibly high volumes. It's a little bit of a chicken and egg problem. But I mean, you wouldn't be able to, they need to fill these 8-car trains in order to be running them every 5 minutes.
Do you want to talk about parking in Berlin before we wrap up the news section?
Yeah. Actually, tell me what's going on in Portland now over in the U.S.
Well, this is just a small story, but there's this new service in the U.S. called parkatmyhouse.com, parkatmyhouse.com, and they've been around in the U.K. for a while. The idea is, which is a clever idea, is that you can rent out your driveway for cash to anybody who wants it. So the location near the train stations suddenly becomes very valuable because, of course, a lot of train stations in Portland fill up, and as they do in any city, the company estimates that quote, property owners who live near commuter areas with a train station can expect to earn over $2,000 per parking spot annually. That's a lot of money.
That's crazy.
That, of course, assumes that there's a large percentage of people who are using it, and they've only just launched in the United States, and they're only marketing it in New York, D.C., and Boston. But it is available now in Portland. We just heard about this. I thought that it's kind of cool. We talked about the peer-to-peer car sharing. This is right. Peer-to-peer parking space sharing. And it lets somebody who doesn't have a car in their parking lot, you know, make some money off of that.
That's it's really interesting. So why are they targeting New York, D.C. and Boston?
Well, because Boston, as we also learned from that report I mentioned, is the number one walking city in the country. And like D.C. and New York, of course, that helps it have a lot of transit riders and increases the number of people who want to park and then leave their car behind somewhere other than their house. I think that's the factor. But it's definitely part of a low-car system because anytime that you are motivated to park your car somewhere else, that means that you're getting around probably by transit and joining the system after you've made that last-mile connection to your house and your car, presumably.
All right. Well, parking in Berlin, if we want to talk about is crazy. Well, German drivers, I will say, are incredibly skilled. It's scary how skilled they are. I think they have a very intense driving training here. But the things that I watch them do, I'm like, I think most American drivers would not be capable of this. The way that they park on the side of the street is not just like a parallel parking like it is here. It's that's on the street. They actually, the first time I saw it, I thought they were doing it wrong. The drivers do a three-point turn and back up halfway onto the sidewalk, and half of their car is in this special sidewalk area that's reserved for the rear end of cars. So their cars are like dangling halfway off the sidewalk onto the street at an angle, and they're all lined up perfectly that way. It's amazing to watch them get out of these things.
Huh.
But
so is it like angle parking, like in a small town, sort of along the main street?
It's like angle parking, but then half their car is on the sidewalk and half is on the street.
So their wheels are rolled up on this higher level?
Yeah.
Are you sure that everybody just didn't start doing it wrong?
No.
There's because everybody was already wrong.
There's like little signs on the side that show a picture of how you're supposed to do it.
Of a car at some like weird angle with its axles like 20 degrees off?
Yeah, it's so weird.
Okay.
But what's interesting is this then creates a barrier. So the way it goes is they've got these separated bike paths everywhere on the sidewalks. And right, so you've got your angled bike parking or your angled car parking between the street and the bike path, and then you've got the bike path going along there, and then you have your pedestrians outside of your bike path, and there's like a little kind of marker that separates the pedestrians. The only problem with this is that as a biker, the pedestrians have to cross to get to the bus stops. So you're constantly being kind of, the flow of your bike path is getting interrupted by pedestrians waiting to cross or crossing to get on the bike or get on the bus.
Right. The only place where they have that separation, the bike path is on the other side of the parked cars, is I think there's a stretch like that near PSU here in Portland. Is that right?
Yeah, they also launched another cycle track that's sort of a real cycle track. The difference between that, the one by PSU, is the bike path is actually on the street there, and here this is on the sidewalk. It's fully on the sidewalk.
Got it.
So As a bicycle here, too, you do all your turns like a pedestrian does. So you do them by crossing the street, turning your bike, and then waiting to go across with the car traffic. And there's special little bike signals for turning. And when you're waiting for those bike signals, you're actually waiting like almost in the intersection in the opposite direction of the traffic that's coming towards you. It's very strange. I'll post a picture of it.
Okay, great. And I'll put it on the blog post associated with this podcast. Have we hit the main topics? We'll have lots more to talk about Berlin, I assume, but
yes, and talking about Venice next month.
Venice.
I'm going to Venice, which is the ultimate car-free city. There's no cars allowed.
So. Yeah, that is crazy. It's completely silent, is what I hear.
But I will. I'll tell you all about the car-free living in Venice.
I look forward to hearing about it. I'm sure everybody does. That's great. So I'm going to tell you the transit tip of the month. When you're waiting for your bus in Portland, because that's what you do in Portland, you spend a lot of time waiting for the bus and deciding, should I just walk to my destination? I'm on 11th Avenue. I should just walk down 11th Avenue instead of waiting for the freaking 70. 70's never going to come. Here's what you do. You multiply the number of miles to your destination by 30. So if you're going, for example, half a mile, you multiply that by 30, you get 15. And if the answer is smaller than the bus frequency in minutes, walk.
If
the answer is larger than the bus frequency in minutes, then wait for the bus.
That's really interesting.
That you always want to walk towards your destination, because what if you get there first?
Exactly.
So, yeah, we were doing the math here.
So this determines which way you should walk. You should either walk to your destination or towards your bus.
Or you should just sit there and read your book. That's based on some assumptions about speed and frequency, and it's based on the fact that, like, you don't know when your bus is about to show up. Obviously, that should affect your decision, but we divide the frequency in half and assume that on average, if a bus comes every 10 minutes, it'll show up every 5 minutes, you'll have a 5 minute wait. Lily, do you have some TriMet tweets?
I do have some TriMet tweets from afar. So I actually tried to find tweets entirely related to the U-Bahn and the S-Bahn here, tagged with BVGay, which is the name of our transit provider here. Turns out that Germans don't really like to complain about the U-Bahn and the S-Bahn nearly as much as we like to complain about TriMet. I couldn't find any snarky tweets whatsoever. Everything was just like, oh, by the way, there's new ads on BVJ or something. It wasn't very... So, Mike's Rigsby says, chick on my TriMet 99 wearing a giant fuzzy white hat with ears. It looks like a panda is making love with her head. Sarah Burke says, bus driver leans out window to tell totally drenched cyclist, you're my hero. You're a crazy dude. This one is actually the first TriMet-related tweet that is actually from TriMet itself. Because wow. I don't think they realized how ironic and hilarious this tweet was. Max Blue Line trains are returning to regular schedules. Expect up to 30-minute delays.
Yeah, that is great.
David Frey, missed another train due to delays. I easily spend 20 minutes riding or waiting for the train for every hour I work. And it's tagged commute hell.
Right.
And our very last tweet, Luna Robverse says, this bus is getting slower the closer it gets to my stop. It's like Zeno's paradox of transit. All right, so that's it for TriMet Tweets. What about the Only on the Bus this month?
It is by Ellery. It's actually Only on the Max this month, so it's about the Yellow Line. And here's how it begins. The other guy, I don't really remember, but the poet guy looked like a poet. This is when I was going to PSU last fall. I was coming back from modern composition theory class. They were just a couple, like, street guys. He had shaggy gray hair, beard in his 50s. He's talking with his friend, having one of those conversations where they start including the people around them, you know? They're sitting in front of me, and there's an attractive young woman across from me. And in the course of the conversation, he starts to address her. So then once he's kind of involved her, he was like, you know, I wrote a poem today. He says it directly to her. That's when I realize, oh, I'm going to get a poem on the bus. This is awesome. She gives him the minimum he needs for encouragement. Like, oh, really? He's like, it's called Footlocker of Love. I'm never going to be able to recreate it completely accurately. But here it is. You don't want to go down to my Footlocker of Love because it smells of feet and love. In my Footlocker of Love. And then it takes some sort of tender, sappy turn that I don't remember. I don't think she said anything afterwards. But the funny thing is that everyone else feels included. Everyone around the woman is like, you know, that's not too bad. It was like spontaneous performance art given completely generously to whoever was there, with nothing expected except maybe the vague interest of some hot girl. I don't think he figured they were going to go walk out together and go all Julie Delpy, Ethan Hawke. It was just one of those bus encounters. You see somebody and want them to be interested in you for however long that time is. I would have happily listened to him for the rest of the ride if they were all like Foot Locker of Love.
That was brilliant. I don't know how we can top that off, so I think that's the end of our show.
All right, thanks. Oh, go ahead.
I want to do a really quick shout-out and say that I am crowdsourcing ideas for my thesis, and if you have anything that you'd like to see that's transit-related studied, you should check out and submit ideas. It's at pdx.be/thesis.
Nice.
You can also subscribe to the Portland Afoot podcast at pdx.be/podcast and send us any comments you have at podcast@portlandafoot.org.
You can support Portland Afoot by subscribing to our 10-minute monthly news magazine about low-car life in Portland at portlandafoot.org/subscribe.
You can follow me at Anomalily on Twitter,
where you can almost certainly figure out how to follow Portland Afoot. I'm Michael Anderson, your editor.
I'm Lillian Kerbake, your producer. Thanks for listening. Until next month, exit through the back.
Pass on the left.
And don't forget to thank your bus driver.